Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWFinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones going mobile today in the Sunbury Motor Studio in East Lansing.
Indeed I am. Yes, and today's show being brought to you by our good friend Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or go online to REWFinancial.com. And we're in the mobile Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We're going to talk Bucknell recruiting today and what Joe Susan was able to do with his class at 3:35 today. Meanwhile, we have been called ugly Americans.
What did we do?
Yes, the Kevin Herr Olympic movement has now labeled us ugly Americans.
And what did we do?
How about that?
What did we do to deserve
what
the title?
What did we do? We've been telling everybody what's wrong over there.
Oh, well, that's our mistake then, yes. Nobody likes to be told they're wrong.
Well, no, nobody likes that at all. But the bottom line is, look, let's get something straight. I think that there's, if you are someone who studies history, the old Iron Curtain, which allegedly doesn't exist anymore, allegedly, communism, oh, it's, you know, certainly on the run, allegedly. What's happened now is that in two of the last four Olympiads have gone to China and Russia, opening up the door to current communist and or dictatorial countries. And over time, the Olympics have been used as a tool by these countries to show societal superiority. For a long time, the Soviet Union, the old East Germany, showing that their society was superior because they were churning out superior systems and superior athletes, and there was a way to show the world superiority. You notice that China has picked up that mantle, and China has made an incredible push in the Olympic Games.
Yeah, anybody that watches any diving.
Especially in the Summer Games. Diving, gymnastics. I mean, it goes on and on. That's why I really felt strongly when wrestling was on the borderline of being cut that a Far Eastern sport was going to be the one that would take that spot because it would provide more Olympic medals, which obviously would open the door for more success in winning. What happened was that they put the Summer Games in Beijing in 2008. And so all the Western reporters come in there, look around and say, wow, this isn't great. And they pointed out all the faults. They hate that. Now you bring them to Russia. Putin's a dictator. I don't expect to be surrounded at any moment by the KGB. Oh, that's right, he used to work there. And guess what? It's the same thing. They can't get it done. And their image that they try to build through sports, the Olympics have not helped the image. So we're ugly Americans for pointing out that we can go as we can do whatever we wish, whatever we wish, and that when we put on an event, the Peter Ueberroth, Mitt Romney way, and you're saying, well, why those two names? Well, Ueberroth is the one that saved the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles by opening it up to corporate sponsorship, which made a huge difference. And then in 2002, Mitt Romney saved the 2002 Winter Games in Salt Lake City doing it the same way.
Do you realize
now,
that
Vancouver... Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you realize that Russia spent as much money building a rail and highway from Sochi to the mountain areas where they're having the Alpine events as they did for the entire Vancouver Olympics?
Right, exactly. I mean, it is beyond... The International Olympic Committee lives in this idealistic fog. And I realize that they want to get the Olympics to Australia, they want to get it to the Far East, they want to get it to to North America by going to Rio, getting it to South America, and of course getting it to Russia, which they're doing right now. I think eventually they would love to have the Olympics somewhere in Africa. I understand that. I understand the idealism. Idealism is a beautiful thing, to have great ideas. And the idea of spreading the Olympic Games around the world, which brings countries together in a peaceful sporting endeavor, is tremendous. I love the idea. Let's take the Olympics to South America. Let's take the Olympics to Europe, North America. Let's take the Olympics to Australia, to Africa. Okay? Spread it all around the world. Now here comes that nasty word that doesn't fit well with ideology. Realism. While we can sit here and can idealistically talk about bringing the Olympic Games someplace and have everybody just come together in peaceful coexistence and have the games and have the host country feel great and have people feel great about the host country. That's a wonderful thing to have happen. But that's not the real world, unfortunately. Unfortunately, realism creeps into it. Holding the Olympics in a Beijing, I'm glad they've done it because I think it taught everybody a lesson. Holding the Olympics in Russia, I'm actually glad they're doing it. It teaches everybody a lesson. The world is, the host countries are not ready to have the world see all the problems of their system, because their ideology does not match up with our ideology. Their ideology doesn't match up with what is a normal ideology. And they don't like it having it pointed out. So there's a part of me that's glad it's gone to these places. But why is it when you bring it to London, Vancouver, Salt Lake City, Barcelona, Lillehammer, Albertville, you know, Atlanta received criticism, but Atlanta still was a beautiful. Sydney, Athens, Turin. Okay, what are the two Olympiads that have brought with them step back and say, "You have to be kidding me, really?"
I don't know that China. I don't know that Beijing was as bad as Sochi is being discussed.
No. In 2008, all they talked about was restricted movement, can't go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the restricted movement and with the government there. I'm looking at it from a standpoint of like having facilities.
Kevin, that's what it's all about here, okay? The government is running the Olympics, right? And they are restricting everything. reporters are going in there and they're having a miserable experience. Okay, I can't leave my hotel in Beijing to go. I guess I have to go from the hotel to the venue and venue back to the hotel. What if I want to walk?
Well, I mean, I understand that, but I think the bigger issue this time around is the fact that there's nothing. It's not ready.
Okay. It's ideology. Okay. Okay. So let's go. Okay. That's great. Let's go from Sochi. Boy, I would love to see Red Square. Can I do it?
I'm guessing no.
It's more to it than just being in a village. Okay, all those people that went to Vancouver, you know, I mean, you know how many crossed over into the United States and went to Seattle, which is a beautiful cosmopolitan Western city that has actually a lot of Far Eastern roots in it because there's a very heavy Japanese influence up there. In the Northwest. But you know how many people crossed over to the United States and had a good time and crossed back over to Canada and had a great time, and everybody tells you Vancouver was great. Gee, I went to the London Olympics. Yeah, you know, it was fabulous. That way I was able to go up north. It was great. I had a tea time at St. Andrews. Fabulous. Could travel if I wanted. I mean, I'm going to be going to Ireland here in August, for goodness sakes. You know, we're thinking about maybe taking either a quick plane trip over to England or Scotland for a day. Why? Because I can. Here they stick you in a building and the toilet doesn't run. I'm in a Marriott, very comfortable, by the way, here in Lansing.
See, I think that's the bigger issue outside the political side of it and where you can go and where you can't go. I think the bigger issue is they're not prepared for the Olympics, period. I mean, that's... I find that a problem.
And why aren't they prepared?
Well, there's a host of reasons, including a lot of greased palms along the way.
Because a government-run society can't get it done.
There's rumors that the Russian Organizing Committee spent more money on bribes than they did on the Olympics itself.
Well, if they'd spent $52 billion instead of $51 million, they could have gone for the whole boat with running water. All right, today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484, or you can go online to rewfinancial.com. Sunbury Motors Studio Mobile today in Lansing, where... Here in the Marriott, showers, toilets, all work.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us in Lansing, where tonight the Nittany Lion basketball team with a nationally televised game on ESPN2. We'll be taking on Michigan State at 9 o'clock tonight. And Michigan State, of course, ranked 9th in the country. The Nittany Lions actually had the Big Ten's longest winning streak at 3 in a row.
What time's that game start in Sochi?
Here's a word I want to have you ingrained in your mind. Okay. Before you ask the question.
Okay, what's that?
And I want you to remember this word forever.
All right, I'm listening close.
Irrelevant.
Relevance.
Irrelevant. Yes. All right. Today's show brought to you, and this is relevant, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. You can go online to rewfinancial.com. The Sunbury Motors Studio is mobile in Lansing, where... Of course, they're celebrating still the Rose Bowl here and a 9th-ranked basketball team, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. All right, we're very pleased to bring in a good friend and someone who has done a fabulous job with the Bucknell football program, going 6-5 this past season, Joe Susan, to talk about their recruiting class. Joe, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Is Kevin in Sochi? He sounds like he's by the beach wearing a Speedo.
First of
don't
all,
don't put
let's,
that
let's
picture in
about,
anybody's head.
Okay. Yeah, in the world that I'm in, where I do play-by-play and we paint pictures, Joe, that's not the one we want out there.
Yeah, I apologize for that. We can censor that, right?
Number two, we can censor that. And then number two, believe me, we tried to get a fund to send him to Sochi.
Yes.
So, 18 recruits in this class for you, Joe. It's heavy on defense with 14 of the 18 at least initially listed there. What's the game plan into this?
We did. You know, one of the things that when you deal with 15 scholarships, which we had coming into this year, going into this class, you have to approach each recruiting year like the NFL approaches the draft. You have to recruit for your needs as it relates to your depth chart. We were pretty much the opposite last year in terms of trying to fill needs in the offensive line, which we took five last year, took two receivers last year, took a quarterback last year, and took two running backs last year. So it's something that when people see the difference between offense and defense when they look at a class, obviously there is a big difference, but it's related to what our needs are as it relates to our current depth chart. And I would imagine that going into recruiting for the class next year will be a little bit more balanced, but obviously it's going to be related to what we look at when we see our depth chart and how many years each kid has available. And moving forward, it's not something that you kind of close your eyes and get what you can. You have to fill specific position needs, and we feel we did.
Yeah, that's always a question I ask every coach, whether it's James Franklin, yourself, Dave Paulson, even Patrick Chambers. I've always talked about the necessity of positional balance in recruiting, and the big picture, usually 2-3 years out on positional balance. Does this class give you a step in that direction?
It certainly does. We actually put our incoming freshmen on our depth charts today, and it really makes it a lot more balanced than it was. We were a little light on our defensive side, and one of the things, we took three linebackers in this class. They play a lot of positions other than linebacker. They're critical in your special teams. And we took three defensive ends that somewhere along the way, one of those guys will probably move inside. And that is always been the way we've approached it. We'd rather move a kid from the back to the front than from the front to the back. And you know, the more athletes, the more movement ability we have on the field, the better we'll be. We did not take an offensive lineman. We wanted to take one, and he chose to go someplace else, and we're not going to play against him, which is a good thing. But and if we play against him, it's a good thing too, because we're playing up. But
right.
You know, it's we took a quarterback. It's important to get a quarterback in each class, and I think that as a whole, we're pleased with this class. And you know, you can tell the merit, you can tell the value of a class when they start playing. And we were fortunate to play quite a few freshmen this past year that brings us into this next season returning quite a few starters, 9 on offense, 7 on defense, and you know, that's pretty good.
Joe, the Patriot League also does not redshirt, so there is more emphasis put on the ability for somebody to play in the cycle quicker. I know you don't want to play anybody until they're ready, but still, the importance of a coaching staff working with players and getting them ingrained as quickly as possible in the system, how important is that?
That is critical, Steve. Actually, the kids that just signed will start to get our strength training information starting tomorrow, and then we'll begin to build a package for them related to the specific side they're on, offensively, defensively, special teams, that builds up a playbook that we follow up with video DVDs, so they see it in the playbook, but they see it in pictures. And these kids are picture learners anyhow, and you know, they right. come to us sometime in the spring, say, "Coach, I got this," and then you line them up and something changes in the front or coverage, and they have no idea where they're going. But that's the nature of the freshman. we were fortunate to have some pretty good freshmen play significant roles this past year. Our left tackle, Julian Davenport, played every snap. He's a 6'7", 320-pounder that we're glad he's here. And then our running back, C.J. Williams, missed a game and still rushed for 900 yards and had shared some time. Then we had a true freshman start at center for most of the year, and those kids grow up.
They sure do. Of the 18 on this list, 11 are from Pennsylvania or New Jersey. There's also one other from New York. The idea of keeping it in that protractor regional area, how does that help you in terms of the relationships that you build with these young people and their families as you go through this process?
I've always felt that a kid plays a little bit different knowing his parents are in the stands, and I think there's a lot of merit to that. And some of it is the relationships that we grow with the coaches in these areas. And one of the things that we've already started to do is recruit the next class. And our focus is, and our philosophy will always be, to bring them up, them knowing who and what we are, bring them up young. We're able to see those kids more often in camp, and they become familiar with us. Coming here on a junior day, coming here during spring practice, ultimately coming to our camps, and those are important vehicles by which you get to know not just the athlete but the kid and his family. And you know, the challenge at a place like this is being able to manage your time as it relates to what they're doing here from an academic standpoint, and what we need to have them do to play in the Division I level. So we spend as much time evaluating their character, and that is so important to how we believe this game should be, and our philosophy in terms of who they are when nobody's looking, and that is really critical for us. And you know, you get kids that know what it is to work hard, but the more leaders you recruit, the easier job is as a football coach. And you know, you get character kids, and then you get an occasional kid that's a character too. You need some of that as well.
This is also a class where you brought in specifically a kicker and also a young man who's not only a linebacker but is a long snapper. The importance of addressing those two needs for you moving forward.
We've been spoiled the past 4 years by a young man named Jeff Goyette, who is probably the second best kid I've ever been around in my career, and the first best kid is still doing it for a living with the Cincinnati Bengals. Jeff had those types of times, but he's a six-footer, and you know, I know that he ultimately has a dream of doing it in the NFL. We have a couple kids in our program, Steve, that are long snappers, but they're also significant position players, and it's a risk right at times if you have a position player doing that for you. And let's say he's a defensive end and you know, breaks his finger. Still can play defensive end, but he's going to have trouble long snapping. So the young man that we're bringing in, Tom Adams, out of Pope John up in Sparta, New Jersey, becomes a real important factor in this, and he's a longer kid too, and that helps. You know, but when he committed to us, I told him I promised I would. I've always coached long snappers. I told him I promised I would not screw him up. It's become a lost art. And then the kicker.
It is.
We brought in a scholarship kicker last year, and we felt the need to, because the scholarship kicker we had last year does all three, but it's so hard to do all three at this level. And the young man, Connor Feehan, who the good thing is when he showed up on campus, he was dressed in camo. So and he fits into some of the guys that go fishing and hunting all the time, so I knew he'd fit in right away. But it gives us a chance to find out what they do best and have them focus on that. We were, you know, with Kyle Sullivan, who did so many different things for us, and he's a lefty. You know, you get spoiled by him, and then he's graduating. So I would rather have a guy do the kickoffs, place kicking, and then have another guy do the punting, because it's like a golf swing compared to a baseball swing, two different things.
Right. Well, in fact, that you talk about the long snapping part of it. There's a reason why, for example, Jim Peterczak and Steve DiAzzi both had double-digit careers in the NFL because they were so good at it. That was a roster spot they could ill afford not to give up, and that's the importance of that long snapping spot. You got to have it.
And those guys, you know, they do what they do. They come over, put their baseball hat on, smoke a cigarette, and then go out and do something else. But it's so true, and it has become a lost art. And you need, you know, some teams still do it with a big guy. But in terms of punt protection and punt coverage, Jeff Goyette did a lot of good things for us in coverage and making tackles on the punt team. And he was so reliable that that was one part that you really didn't have to worry about in terms of people trying to block your punt. They wound up trying to hold us up and return it, and with Kyle Sullivan being able to place it and get some very good height hang time on it, it made that a part of our special teams. It became more and more of a weapon.
You have one quarterback, as you mentioned earlier in this class, and also one wideout in this class. In terms of development, you know, the importance of bringing them in now, and the style of play you want to play, how well will they match it?
I think they really fit in well. We brought in two last year. Will Carter actually played a bunch this past year as a freshman. Up until yesterday, he was probably the fastest guy on campus. And Nathan Medrano out of San Diego is another speed kid. And then Kyle Kinner we had in our camp. He's a young man from St. Louis. And I think he's going to fit in well. The unique thing about the quarterback, Matt Mew, is that he was a wing T quarterback in high school and on a team that would average 240 yards rushing in the high school games. So he might have thrown the ball six or seven times a game, but we saw him in a variety of camps, and he's a big kid, 6'4", about 205, and he fits what we're looking for within the style of what we want to do offensively, and has a big arm, and you know, I think he'll be a lot more comfortable as a pocket passer using the three-step and the five-step concepts that we use.
Give me an idea. You talk about the camp. You've referenced it a couple of times. Evaluation for you, not just of athletic ability, but personality. How much of that has the camp helped?
Immeasurable. One of the things that I find hard to do, or I found hard to do when we started running these camps, is that I've always been of the mindset I've got to be doing something, and sometimes you're best when you're doing nothing. And roaming around the camp and seeing these kids, seeing how they compete, seeing how they react when something doesn't go their way. And then another thing is seeing how they interact with their parents and how they treat their parents and their moms specifically really give you a good feel for how a kid's raised and what's important to him beyond the field. And you know, after being at this for 36 years, you develop a way of listening for the things that they don't tell you and seeing them. And you know, the nonverbal concepts that are critical to finding out what a kid's about, and especially when you're in the process of considering investing a full scholarship into a young man, you want to make sure that it's not just a talent thing, that it goes beyond that into who he is when he's off the field. And we're in a unique position on this campus in that when we're full, when we have our full team here, we have 92 kids. It's one of the bigger groups on this campus, and we can impact this campus. And that to me is very critical in terms of, you know, who these guys are between 18 and 23.
Trust is obviously an important word, and you just talked about that in your observations, watching them interact with teammates and parents. At the same time, when they decide to go to your place, they have to put their trust in you and your staff. You go out initially when you take this job, and you can talk about an idea of where Bucknell football is going. The fact that you've been now over 500 two of the last 3 years, and you've established something, how much easier is that made now with the messaging and also their reception of the message?
What's unique is that immediacy means so much to this generation that they don't look back. But seeing that we did what we did this year after going through some adversity, and a lot of the kids followed us through that, and watching when they come and see us play and they see how hard our kids play, and you know, when they see what our kids do when they score touchdowns, they hand the ball to the officials, not a lot of talk on the field, and that's what we coach through the week. And you know, it takes the right kid to come here, but those are the kids we've been fortunate to yield. And you know, the character of these kids will be critical in leading the next group, and we're fortunate that we're led by our seniors, and they'll bring this new group to us, and they all coming in as the top of the heap, and they find out pretty quickly where they fit in. But there's a way to do things, and having it ingrained in them that this is the way we do things here, and they help teach our freshmen, and these freshmen will ultimately help teach the next group, and it becomes something that if you can be effective with it as a staff, it makes your job in terms of being a football coach so much easier, where you're not constantly hammering them with how to behave. You know, don't wear hats in the building, make sure your professors love you. They understand that, and it's repeated by the guys that are older. And then the other thing, Joe, is we graduate everybody, so you better reload.
Yeah, because you do graduate everybody. Joe, as always, an absolute pleasure. Appreciate the time that you gave us today, and we look forward to watching these young men over the next 4 years with you.
So you're in East Lansing?
I'm in East Lansing.
And Steve's in Sochi. Or Kevin's in Sochi.
Don't I wish.
Yeah.
And he's got a drink with an umbrella in it, and
I'm just sitting here by the Black Sea.
Yeah, you're sitting here probably by a radio or a nuclear reactor that just watch yourself. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Today feels like a game week Tuesday. I got to be careful here.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Joe, thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye.
We'll come back with more here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention residents of Central PA! The sub-zero temperatures are expected for at least another week, but Sunbury Motors is about to heat things up! I wanna see you in a Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia is blasting through this cold winter weather.
Check out these hot deals.
22 of the snow-busted 2014 Sereno all-wheel drive midsize SUVs starting at $23,999. With up to $4,500 off and 0% APR financing available for up to 60 months. How about the all-new redesigned 2014 Kia Soul? 10 to choose from starting at $14,995. Or the 2014 Sportage LX, only $21,965. And every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia helps you blast through the cold with these hot deals. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com. All applicable factory rebates apply. Tax and tax extra must qualify. Specialty incentives apply. 0% financing through KMF. Full effect final price.
REW Financial believes in the value of total commitment. We are a working family who strives to prove strength of character by staying independent and core focused. REW has a commitment to the community and the financial needs of our clients. Let us design your portfolio or retirement strategy. REW Financial Lewisburg. The power of freedom. Securities and advisory services offered through United Planners Financial Services. Member FINRA, SIPC. REW Financial is a DBA of REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, and neither are affiliated with United Planners Financial Services.
All right, we head to the top of the hour here in East Lansing. Look out the window and see Mark D'Antonio shoveling his own driveway. What an impressive moment that is. Just kidding. Tonight, Penn State basketball. Tonight's on ESPN2 as they take on Michigan State this evening. And the Nittany Lions actually have the longest winning streak currently in the Big Ten at 3 in a row. Michigan State is coming off, really for them, an unexpected loss to Georgetown. And they played in Madison Square Garden on Saturday. Michigan State was coming off an overtime win at Iowa Thursday night, but then they had to go from Iowa City right into New York to play at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. And they looked like a team that had flown all day Friday to get there to play for a game on Saturday and just did not have any jump in the game. Gary Harris played very well. Kenny Kaminsky off the bench hit some threes. He played pretty well. Expect Adrian Payne to be back in the lineup tonight. He has missed the last seven games with a foot problem. And Adrian Payne should be back tonight for Michigan State. Tip-off set for 9 tonight. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. You can go online to rewfinancial.com. Second hour of the show, a fundraiser to send Kevin to Russia.
I'm excited.
We have enough for one way?
That's it. I'm cutting you off.